people who come out to us say that we're doing a better job sometimes than people are at home. All our patients are in their own homes, and we look after them in their own homes. We have no inpatients at all. And that's really because it's affordable, but also because it's the African people want to die in their own homes. They're often buried in the garden. And to carry a body home is a very expensive exercise. But also they want their family around them, and they die and they're buried with their ancestors. So this is very important culturally. And we've studied this in 5 countries, and this is where African people mostly want to die.
So does that mean you have to have home teams?
Completely home care. We have, in Kampala, we have 5 teams go out every day. We're actually looking after 1,200 people, at 1,200 patients at the moment, between our 3 hospices. But the suffering is terrible because before we brought in oral morphine, patients were just in agony. Less than 5% reach any chemotherapy or radiotherapy, so the tumour just grows. And you can find in a village a woman with a breast which is huge and fungating and smelling, and the family's in terribly distressed, and sometimes they have to put them outside the house, or they couldn't eat their meals in the house with the smell. They didn't know how to control that, which we all know in hospice care, how to manage that, and manage it very cheaply. So, and this suffering is going on all over Africa.
And is it still going on?
It's still going on. Only 12 out of the 56 countries in Africa have oral affordable morphine. Most of them have injectable, but you can't use that in the home. And also, it's not suitable for these patients. We also find that we have been able to control their pain without ever using any injections. We don't use pumps or anything. And we're able to manage with oral morphine made up from powder and with water and a preservative and a colour coding for the strength. And we can control the pain for the average patient for the price of a loaf of bread for 10 days.
So why isn't it more available?
It's not available because governments have been warned not to bring in opioids. And they thought they were being good if they could reduce their quantity every year. We're now trying to increase the quantity every year for each country. But the first barrier is the government, getting through to the government. But when we bring advocacy, and I've been going with a Ugandan doctor who's very good and used to be chair of the National Drug Authority, and he's very, very respected throughout Africa, and he tells them what the success we've had in Uganda, they do change. We went into 5 countries in the first 3 years of this, of 2000, and we actually got morphine into 4 of them, and the 5th one has just got it in now, which was Ethiopia.
So what is their fear around morphine?
The fear is with the governments, but then it's also with the doctors, the medical professions. We were all taught, if we qualified before Dame Cecily got pain control under control in 1967, that you avoided opioids at all costs. And so some doctors don't move on from what they learnt in medical school, you know, and all the recent advances, they don't get the grip. And they can be very authoritarian and won't allow the junior doctors to prescribe.
Is this because fear of addiction?
It's fear of addiction, and doctors wouldn't prescribe because they felt that if they prescribed, they would be called addicts. And we've actually almost got through that because we've been training the medical students since 1993, and so every doctor who's qualified since 1994 now understands what we're talking about. But in fact, there's not enough doctors to prescribe.
Right.
If we work it out, we've got one doctor to 250 patients who needs prescriptions written. And these doctors have to do surgery, obstetrics, children's care, everything. So the government has changed the law, the statute, which allows nurses to prescribe pethidine, midwives to prescribe pethidine for women in labour, so that it includes nurses who have done 9-month training with us and are recognised as palliative care specialists can prescribe morphine. We're the first country in the world to do that. So Uganda is seen as a success story, and yet we're not reaching 10% of those in need in Uganda.
And who are the we you keep talking about?
Hospice Africa was started in 1993. It was registered in UK in 1993. We started the service with enough money for 3 months for 3 staff in 1993 in Uganda. And it's moved on since then. But we've now been registered in Ireland since 1999 as Friends of Hospice Uganda. But since last year, we're called Hospice Africa Ireland. The Irish have supported us so much with funding from the beginning. Irish Aid has been one of our biggest supporters. And now that we have Hospice Africa in Ireland, Harris Cross Hospice has given us two rooms there and are very supportive of us. And for the first time, we are paying a fundraiser in Ireland. That's Angela Cooney, who's in the office there in Harris Cross. And they are trying to raise funds all the time for us, because we started with £24,000 a year would do it. If we took, and then that would have been approximately 30,000 euros as we look at it today. But now it's taking us 1.5 million euros. We have three hospices looking after 1,200 patients.
So you'd like people who are interested in helping you maybe to log on to the website?
We would like them very much to do that. The Irish website is hospiceafrica, all one word, .ie. The Uganda one is hospiceafrica, all one word, .or.ug.